kept talking about, he goes, I wish there was an app that when I read something on the New York Times that pissed me off, I could just tap my phone and give small amounts of money to someone fighting for that issue. And that just had a bunch of light bulbs went off.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. Jake Sandler is a founder of Change Roots, a for-profit, nonpartisan civic enterprise attempting to use microdonations made in response to public statements to connect the less politically active more closely to their elected representatives, and thus make those representatives more receptive to public opinion. Jake is another example of a civic entrepreneur who, with his other two co-founders, was inspired to try to fix some of what he thinks ails our democracy, focusing on the fact that partisan conflict seems to keep popular common sense legislation from going through Congress. I challenged him quite a bit about whether his model would work or do what he said it would, but he held his own and we had a good conversation. So, with that as background, a quick word from our sponsor, then my interview with Jake Sandler and Change Roots.
Check out the large, detailed, and high-quality political data graphic posters from Timeplots. Our visual history of the American presidency, for example, lets you see the Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Trump presidencies in full context. Timeplot's library includes visual histories of the United States House, the United States Senate, the Supreme Court, and the Democratic and Republican parties. Find them all at www.timeplots.com. Use the code BATTLEFIELD for a discount.
Jake, would you mind introducing yourself and giving me a quick biography?
So my name is Jake Sandler. I grew up in the DC area in Chevy Chase, Maryland. I went to public school in Montgomery County. I went to...
Which public school?
Bethesda Chevy Chase.
Yeah, I played basketball there many times.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Go Barons.
Weekends, yeah.
Where did you go?
I went to Boulder High School in Boulder, Colorado.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. And then I attended Tulane University in New Orleans.
Yeah, just visited that beautiful campus.
Yeah, I love New Orleans, my favorite place. And I studied political economy and Spanish, went abroad in Argentina and thought I was going to go into the World Bank, IMF, microfinance world. But I'd always been passionate about politics. In high school, I thought I wanted to be an attorney for the DOJ in the Civil Rights Division. Guantanamo Bay was an issue very near and dear to my heart. So I came back to DC after graduating, realizing that you had to work for 10 years and have a PhD in order to get an interesting position in the World Bank, which didn't seem like my path. And then worked during the 2012 election for a political organization called GMMB that does a lot of media buys for Democratic races. And so was a media assistant there and helped different campaigns and organizations place their buys. And so I really got to see how money was spent in campaigns, which was an interesting education. Following that, I actually moved to Colorado for a winter and taught snowboarding, which was sort of a lifelong dream of mine in Breckenridge.
I assume you knew how to snowboard fairly well, if
yeah,
that's what you were.
Absolutely. My cousins and my family grew up in Breckenridge, so we used to go out every spring break. And so I knew the mountain well and loved Colorado.
Yeah, beautiful place. After a career in teaching snowboarding, what came next?
Everybody was confused why, but I wanted to come back to DC and sort of enter into politics and see if I could contribute. And so I joined a small public affairs firm called Smith, Dawson & Andrews that helps county and city governments get transportation funding, essentially. Found the work to be interesting. Yet there were some things that I witnessed during my time there about how deals are made, about how fundraising works, about how favors are traded, that really disillusioned me to the process.
What would be an example of such a thing without being too specific and uncomfortable to your former employer?
So there was one particular poignant episode that will always stand out. Our firm was representing a county in the U.S., and they were under investigation by the Department of Justice for violating the Endangered Species Act, because there is a bird that was flying into lights that they had in their area. And so they had to come up with a plan to mitigate this bird. And if they didn't come up with a plan, they were going to get hit with a huge fine that would have practically bankrupted the county. A senator in the area passed away, and so there was a political vacuum. And so the mayor of the county was running for the open seat, and so was the congresswoman at the time. And basically, the mayor had spent 3 years getting all the groups together to come up with a plan that was going to be effective. And the congresswoman got two bureaucrats in the Fish and Wildlife Agency to kill the plan so that her political opponent, the mayor, wouldn't win, which would have been really minor political points in the campaign.
Yeah, that doesn't sound cool.
They ended up getting fined. They ended up getting practically bankrupt. They didn't have money for schools and roads and all of the basic needs. And it was very disheartening to see.
It's not good to see people being irresponsible in the political space, but it does happen.
Yeah.
Yes. So how long were you at Smith, Dawson, et cetera?
About a year.
Yeah. And then what came next?
So then I decided I needed to take a break, and I left and I joined the private sector. So I joined a financial services consulting firm called Treliant Risk Advisors that helps large financial institutions comply more effectively with Dodd-Frank regulations. What I studied in college was the 2008 financial crises, and so that was sort of in line with my interests. At the time, I then got put on a technology project. They were trying to build software to do the same, and that ended up spinning out into an independent company. And so I was the first employee of what is now Assurity Technologies.
Assurity?
Assurity. And so Assurity builds analytic software that helps big financial institutions comply with parts of Dodd-Frank more effectively, a lot of fair lending laws. So analyzing a bank's portfolio, are you making loans to black people and white people who have the same underlying scores equally? We acquired a couple companies, integrated them all together, did a lot of things textbook incorrectly when building a technology company and building products. It was an amazing experience. I was way over my head, but I think that's how I learned and how I gained the skills that gave me the confidence to then, after 3 years, leave and launch Change Roots, which is what I'm working on now.
So you launched Change Roots. What's the sort of founding story for that, and what is it?
My Change Roots, our mission is to incentivize post-partisanship in politics. And how it really started was I was in LA at the time, and a friend came home from dinner, and she said, and one of the gentlemen she was with at dinner kept talking about, he goes, I wish there was an app that when I read something on the New York Times that pissed me off, I could just tap my phone and give small amounts of money to someone fighting for that issue. And that just had a bunch of light bulbs went off. I go, that's actually an incredibly simple concept, yet could have profound implications, because I think if you add political donations to feedback, you add consequence to the feedback that a lot of the current ways of civically engaging with representatives don't have today. And so I wrote a business plan that night, and then for the next year was still working at Assurity. My best childhood friend who was working with me at Assurity, we started kicking around the idea sort of nights and weekends, and another colleague of mine who the three of us are co-founders of Change Roots, started working on it. After a year, we felt like it was a good enough idea and we felt passionate enough about it to give it a shot. And so we went full time last January.
So tell me about your co-founders.
Yeah, so co-founder Christian Cobb and Sua Kim. So Christian and I met in the first grade and we've been friends ever since. We also went to college together, we're roommates, and now live together. He's a really interesting background because he's always been an incredibly gifted artist and has a talented eye for design, yet he went to school for business and became an accountant. And then he left accounting and joined me at Assurity and became a product manager. So he has sort of the business, financial background, the product background, but he's always been this incredible artist. And so he is our chief creative officer, and he's done a lot of the designs, a lot of the creative assets for the ads, a lot of the thinking of how to take a lot of my dense political ideas and translate it into something that will be interesting and fun for those who aren't typically very engaged in politics. that's one of the things we're trying to accomplish is to be something that's more accessible and interesting to those who don't typically follow.
And was it Sue was the other company?
Sua, yeah.
Sua.
So Sua, when I was at Treliant, she interviewed when she was in college to be an intern. And I interviewed her and I was incredibly impressed by her. And so when she joined Treliant, you know, I finagled my way to get her to be on my team. And then when I left to join Assurity, I brought her along with me. And then when she graduated, we hired her full time. So Sue and I have been working together for many years now and developed a really close working relationship. And she's an incredible operational mind and just a, sort of a utility player who can do everything really well.
So I'm not clear what exactly was the idea that you three coalesced on.
So the idea was to create a way to attach political donations to basically to social media likes and dislikes. So imagine a political Twitter feed where you're posting snippets from news organizations and from tweets and from statements from federal officials, so the president and senators and congresspeople. And then each post has the ability to like or dislike the post. And as a user, you would sign up and attach your credit card. And if you hit like, it would send 25 cents to that politician as a reward. And if you hit dislike, it sends 25 cents to a fund that goes to whoever that representative runs against in their next election.
And is 25 cents the amount? Because having been on the compliance side of campaigns, it might cost you $5 to comply with a 25 cent donation.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a great
so
point.
So it might be almost like a negative.
Yeah, so 25 cents is the minimum. Yeah. You can sort of bump up the donation, so it could be a few bucks.
Where are you in terms of adoption? Is money flowing through?
Yeah,
politicians at
absolutely.
This
point. Yeah. So we launched in late October. We have about 700 users. We have a couple thousand dollars that have been donated through the platform to date. In the last few weeks, we've really started to see more users coming in from different places and starting to immediately donate and to use it more actively. We think that we're starting to find the audience that is resonating with our message and what we're trying to accomplish. And politicians are receiving the money. And we use Democracy Engine, which I'm sure you know Jonathan Zucker, his company, and they do all of the compliance and all of the payments routing. And so campaigns are very used to picking up funds from Democracy Engine. That was a challenge we thought we were gonna have to build ourselves. And when we met Jonathan, that was a huge relief that he had already solved that pretty tricky problem.
Yeah. So how are people finding you?
Yeah, so primarily we are advertising on social media, so paid social on Facebook and Instagram. Mm-hmm. We started a campus ambassador program briefly, but realized we didn't have the bandwidth to execute it well, so we closed that down for now. We're doing a Instagram influencer campaign actually next month that I think will increase the awareness significantly, and then start to do some experiential events.
What does your data show you about what does it cost you in ads to generate $100 in donations?
So our sort of threshold is, when does a user get to $10? Because mm-hmm. we have such micro donations. Mm-hmm. And so costs us about on average $4 to get an email. And I think it's about $23 to get someone to register. And then the percentage of people that register that hit $10 is below 20% right now. Mm-hmm. So we still have a ways to go in optimizing those numbers, but we feel they've been getting better each month. And we've really been spending only about 3 months on paid ads right now.
So what are you adding, do you think, to a potential donor in terms of value that they couldn't find on ActBlue or many of the other donation platforms that are out there?
So we believe that what's unique to ChangeRoots has to do with the behavioral science of effective feedback. In the 50s, there is a famous psychologist, B.F. Skinner, who was famous for having lab rats that were electrocuted or given food to go through mazes. And his research showed that effective feedback is three things. It's immediate, it's specific, and it's consequential. So if you think about it in parenting or, you know, with a dog or performance management, and really at encountering this research at Assurity, our department had to build the performance management program, was how do you give immediate, specific, and consequential feedback in order to maximize the opportunity to improve someone's behavior? So I think today, many of the ways we civically engage, whether it's calls to Congress, marches, letters to Congress, voting, donations, they are usually two of the three, but not all three. So on change routes, what I mean by that is someone says a statement on Twitter or on TV. We then republish it the next day. And then you can give donations to that politician for that statement a day later. And the politician knows that the donation was associated with that statement because we send them a report that says, hey, 50,000 people each gave you 50 cents for this statement on immigration. And so we think that will lead to more impact with your voice rather than waiting for 2 years to go vote on 100 things that they've done in those 2 years or to call Congress, which really doesn't have potency.
You mentioned right at the top that you want to incentivize post-partisanship. You know, I've been letting that percolate a little bit. First, because I'm not sure if post-partisanship is good. And second, because it's unclear to me how a model of pushing donations to partisan politicians for statements that they make, which probably the most partisan statements are the ones that are going to attract the most dollars, is going to incentivize what you want. So talk a little bit about connecting that stated mission with what you're seeing actually happen.
So right now, we are not incentivizing post-partisanship. So that is the next phase of what we're working on. So the first step for us was to build a way for ordinary Americans to give effective feedback to politicians. We think we've built that tool. Next is to first define what post-partisanship means. So we actually are undergoing an effort right now to crowdsource and work with people from all walks of life to understand what post-partisanship means. And the way we think about it is we think modern partisanship is toxic and is what has created the extremism and the vitriol and the anger and sort of the populism we see now. And so first we want to define, okay, what are the characteristics of modern partisanship? You know, focusing on what divides us rather than what unites us. Having contempt for those in the other side. Not having integrity, so not doing what you say you will do. Not using, being evidence-based, not being honest. So let's say those are the characteristics.
That sounds like characteristics of the current president of the United States.
I would say Trump exhibits a lot of those characteristics, but I would also say many Democrats exhibit those characteristics and many Republicans. And there's those who don't exhibit those, but they tend to get less attention.
Supposing someone made the argument that the correlation is actually the opposite, that as people have moved away from parties, we've seen those trends more so. If we can stipulate that an earlier era was less toxic, which I'm not sure if we can totally do that, but if we could, that it was an era where people were more tightly bound to parties and where a lot of the things that you're complaining about weren't happening as much. Why do you think that going further towards de-alignment from parties would reverse those trends?
First, just I think it's helpful to frame it. Post-partisanship, in my mind, is more about defining a set of values that we all believe are good for our leaders to exhibit. And so it's less about necessarily saying, okay, you shouldn't be a Republican, you shouldn't be a Democrat, you shouldn't be a Green Party, you shouldn't be whatever. It's more about, okay, let's value the characteristics and values first, and then the party platform second.
That particular theme that you're enunciating there is very similar to other guests I've had who might be running groups that are trying to push for better servant leaders, regardless of party, let's say, or who are kind of operating in a country first mentality rather than a partisan first mentality. But I'm not sure if it's really the party that's the problem as much as it's sort of the incentives right now in the system to be out there, to be trumpeting some kind of red meat for your fans, which you're almost incentivizing here.
Right. So right now I would agree with you. So where Change Roots is going is we want to quantify the values of postpartisanship. So let's take simple ones. Like let's say a value of postpartisanship is to be bipartisan. So to reach across the aisle. It's to have integrity. So do what you say you will do. So keep your campaign promises, uphold your oath of office. So simple things like showing up to vote. And let's say it's to have a large amount of your political donations come from small donors versus big donors. All three of those things are actually quantifiable with public data. So what we want to do is pull in public data and say, okay, rank every politician on how bipartisan are they. So how often do they co-sponsor a bill introduced by someone of the other party?
Right. And so what we would find then is the more moderate members, the members closer to the center of the spectrum, to the extent there are any left, there's some, that they would rank higher on that, and that the more liberal or the more conservative wouldn't. So is that what you want to be incentivizing then, is donations to people in the middle?
It's less about saying we value moderates over partisans, so therefore we're going to create measures that align to moderates. It's more saying, okay, what are the values that we do want? Mm-hmm. And then if moderates happen to score higher, then the answer would be yes. One of the reasons I think that's important is because one of sort of the principles we've been playing around with, and I would love your perspective on this, is big legislation, big important legislation like Obamacare, like the Civil Rights Act, or like these big pieces, when they're passed with bipartisan support, even if it's 10% of the other side, they are far more resilient
than
when they're passed on party lines.
Do you think that in your sort of mental model of a congressman, do you think they should be more responsive to the public or less?
More responsive.
Isn't it often the courageous politician who doesn't listen to the short-term voices who is more likely to stick to higher values, to the American creed, to the kind of country first leadership that you're thinking about?
I gave a simplistic answer, right? I think it's nuanced, but let's take, for example, I think it's 75% of Democrats and 65% of Republicans, the people, not politicians, support anti-corruption reform. This thing's, you know, ban on a congressperson being able to be a lobbyist after.
So most people when polled will be against corruption.
Right.
Yes.
But, and there's very specific proposals that then poll extremely high on both sides, yet people on both sides don't support those. And so when I say more responsive to people, I think there is a threshold that if 70% of the country and 70% of people in both parties want something, I think for the most part, representatives should be supportive of those measures just because they're supposed to represent the people.
The problem, though, is that when someone gets asked a generic question and it polls at 70%, it's one thing. But when a representative or someone comes up against the specifics, then nothing polls at 70% anymore. Medicare for All polls very well. But when you talk about a specific proposal that might take away private health insurance, and people know that, then it's not going to poll at over 70% anymore. Talk again about your vision for this. Like, if things could go the way you really dream about with this enterprise, what would it look like?
So I think one of the things that we're trying to solve at Change Roots is there's an exhausted majority out there that doesn't engage in politics. So I think you have the 10 to 15% on the left and the right that are 90% of what you hear in media and on social media, and drive the conversation. And so we want to create an app that is accessible and interesting to the middle two-thirds of the country. And so...
But wouldn't you find that you're just going to get those same 10% that are paying attention coming to your app?
So the principles we're using, the way it looks and feels, and you know, we're targeting young Americans. So in the same vein as Instagram and Snapchat and these apps that have taken off, we're trying to use the same design principles. The way we're marketing it, the audiences we're targeting, the way we're going to host experiential events that are less political and less likely to turn off those who aren't interested. I think both the design and the marketing and focusing on values rather than focusing on policy platforms are all things that are very intentional in order to build something that gives people who don't typically follow an easy way to start learning the issues, learning the politicians, learning what values they care about, and then who that's in leadership aligns to those values so that they can support those they're aligned with and then fund the opponents of those they're not aligned with. Because I think that's the mechanism that's unique with Change Roots, is we give people an opportunity to actually impact the outcome of the election when they're not in the district and they're not voting, and throughout the year in a very micro way that can fit into their daily life.
Let's talk a little bit about what you've learned so far. So you said you have something like 700 active users. Who are they? What are they doing? Why are they there?
We intentionally don't collect a lot of demographic information. We collect the bare minimum we need to for the Federal Elections Commission in order to do the compliance. So we typically know like when they click on an ad, but we don't have a lot of data and we haven't done focus groups yet. So we still don't know who our users are. We typically know the geography that they come in from because we have their mailing address, which is...
What are they doing? So they're on your app. Are they on there for a long time? Are they donating? What does the universe look like of actions?
Yeah. So the average active user contributes about $7 a month. They usually contribute between 25 and 75 cents per transaction. So each time they donate, they hit once or twice or three times. And they typically filter by issue. So we have 15 categories of issues and someone will predominantly donate to immigration tiles. So if there's, I think we've put up about 700 posts and let's say 150 of them are about immigration because during the wall, that was a big topic. They'll go through and filter by issues and then give typically to one party on an issue they care about. What's been interesting is those people who have given to politicians of either party or funded the opponents of politicians of either party on particular issues. One of our hypotheses is that the exhausted majority, so not the really engaged, are more interested in issues than they are in sticking with the party line. And the data, it's too early to say definitively is proving that, but signs are positive.
Is there a particular politician who is leading in donations too?
Yeah, so for and against Trump, he's leading. Mark Warner has gotten a lot of donations. Chris Murphy, I think part of Chris Murphy's appeal is that his personality comes through in a lot of his statements, and I think people are interested in that.
Well, those are also fairly policy-oriented members of the Senate, both Warner and Murphy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Mitch McConnell. And partially is we do post more about them because they're in the news more. Ben Sasse has had a fair amount of donations. Rand Paul. Again, people who tend to have, I'd say, like compelling views that tend to be different or stand out or their personality do better.
How is this working as a business? And what kind of entity is it?
Yeah, so we're a for-profit, mission-based corporation.
Right. Does that mean a B Corp or just regular Corp?
Yeah, regular Corp.
And did you raise money for it?
Right now, it's self-funded.
Self-funded by you?
Yes.
Self-funded by the three founders?
Primarily by me, but yes.
Yeah. And what's the business model here? How are you going to pay yourself back?
Absolutely. So our business model, when users sign up, we ask them to give a tip to Change Roots for every donation they make. We've actually seen an average of 15% tip. So every time a user makes a $10 donation, they give $1.50 to Change Roots. Primary business model is that. We are also going into a business-to-business direction. So working with advocacy organizations, we can create this technology for them to include on their website with their branding. They can choose what posts go up to nonprofits or politicians so that they can have their supporters give in a way that's mission aligned to them. And then we would split the tips with that organization and there would be a setup fee. And then as we get to a bit more scale, we will likely put in sponsored content. So we'll have people pay to be placed on our feed, much like Axios does. They're sort of our North Star for how to do it. And we think those three revenue streams can get us to break even profitability.
What did you do in the way of market research when you were getting ready to launch this? What other platforms did you look at? And who do you see as kind of competition for yourself?
Yeah, I would say the most directly similar is CrowdPAC, especially their Susan Collins campaign to raise money for her opponent if she voted yes on Kavanaugh. That is pretty precisely what we're doing. We're doing it in a more micro fashion, but philosophically. But they otherwise are pretty progressive, so they don't have conservatives on their site. Swing Left, we looked at Countable, Brigade. There's a new organization called Pretani.
Say that one again.
I think it's pronounced Pretani. I think it's Prytany. It's a very similar to Brigade concept.
Is Brigade still out there? Did it fold?
I've heard it's closing down. Yeah, I don't know exactly where they are. Mm-hmm. And I've heard they spent
a lot of money.
A lot of money.
Tens and tens of millions of dollars.
Yes.
I have been following this general space since '90s. It's been a very hard place to make a living. The connection between issues and politicians and voters and information and donations, very, very tricky and not too many people have survived with a fair amount of money has been spent. And when you look at these other contenders out there, what have you seen that you thought was working and that you admired and wanted to maybe crib from?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them were really innovative in how they were presenting this dense, complicated, nuanced political information about representatives and issues. I mean, I think that's an incredibly hard nut to crack. I really liked Countable's. I like Countable's interface in a lot of ways.
They're still alive, Countable.
Yeah, Countable still.
Just interviewed their founder. Yeah.
And Brigade.
But do they do the donations the same?
No. So two things I think that we are optimistic is going to separate us in terms of being able to become profitable. And I don't know. Countable could be very profitable, so I'm just not familiar. We are really designing this for the non-political savvy user. So we think that...
So picking the hardest segment of the possible universe that you could go after. That's smart.
Yeah, well, it's funny. A lot of people in politics, their immediate reaction is like, this has been tried before. Penetrating the disengaged audience is incredibly difficult, incredibly expensive. Like, this is foolish. Yeah. So...
Well, that's a good place to go, right? It's a blue ocean.
Yeah, I'm not ignoring that advice. I think it's sound. And also, I believe that there's a real opportunity to approach it in a different way. I just think like... I consider myself sort of like a dense political. I've followed this my whole life. And it's hard for us to grasp how ordinary people just don't really care or don't want to be engaged. And so I think it's hard to design products.
Yeah, most people don't follow politics very closely.
Yeah. And so I think the Skim is like a great example. And I know HuffPost has sort of a comparable newsletter to the Skim. And they've been able to grow tremendous audience with a lot of loyalty by presenting this information in a more accessible and fun and lightweight way. And so I think that's one of the things we saw that we were really encouraged by is, okay, if the Skim can grow millions of users, and again, they're not paying, so it's a different calculation, but then there is an appetite amongst at least a portion of the exhausted majority to learn a bit more about politics and be a bit more engaged as long as they don't have to spend a lot of time and money doing so. And so that's sort of the sweet spot that we think we're accessing. And we think the micro donations add a unique enough flavor. And if we start to get politicians reacting to the donations happening on change routes, then I think we could see something, like really see it take off. Because imagine Cory Booker makes a statement, raises $100,000 from 50,000 people overnight, either for him or for his opponent. And then he comes back and says, hey, Changers community, I see what you are doing.
But isn't that exactly already happening, right? Like without Change Roots, like if he does make a statement, people are going to immediately find him and donate to him or donate to his opponent, right? I mean, that's already wired into this system.
I mean, you know, with Bernie Sanders, I think you could say to some extent he's the one that originated this concept. Like he did get people who weren't engaged fired up and donating small amounts. It's primarily done through email and it's primarily done one or two events throughout a campaign, maybe a couple. But I don't think there's this consistent feedback loop and engagement where someone can look for 30 seconds each day, scan what's going on, react and give a couple bucks and then go about their day.
I had interviewed a guy, Dan Ratner, who had a company called Public Good. Had you run across that?
I have not, no.
This is quite a while ago, and I have no idea what's happening with it since. But I think what he was trying to do is work with major media organizations to insert into articles the ability to, say, donate to a nonprofit when it came up in the news. You know, when there was a hurricane, you could give to relief organizations or something. It's a related idea. Might be something worth looking at or seeing what learnings he has.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's also a similar company I'm familiar with called Action Button. Same concept. They embed a volunteer, a donate, and this button into articles. I think that's a phenomenal premise.
You're in a challenging place in a startup, unquestionably. There's only a certain amount of time to turn an enterprise into something that's self-sustaining. Where are you on that? And what are the moves you think you might be able to make to bring in enough money to keep going? Because that's the challenge of any entrepreneur, of any CEO. of a nascent organization.
Yeah, and especially, you know, sort of a social oriented organization where you're balancing impact and profit, where
which you're going to curtail some of your options.
Well, like I think we could be successful next month if we really built this to throw for the Republicans their own version, the Democrats their own version, to throw red meat to their bases and just capture the people who are angriest and loudest. I'm not interested in contributing to the vitriol. That is just antithesis of our mission. And so there is a challenge in how do we find a sustainable business model that helps bridge and heal the country in the post-partisan way is the sort of the term we're using.
What are some of the best ideas that you have at the moment that you're noodling about that might take you there?
So the B2B route, we have our first pilot. We're just getting up and running. I think we're going to learn a lot. There's a large progressive organization that is also interested in incorporating it to their website, and they have millions of followers. So if you have millions of followers and a small percentage of them goes on and donates regularly, that could be a revenue stream that leads us to sustainability. We're three full-time people and we have a lot of vendors, so we run pretty lean. So we really need to hit 100,000 active users donating $5 a month to break even. And that's just on the B2C model. And so if we combine the B2B model, well, let's say we get 10 clients and they have decent engagement rates of decent supporters, all of a sudden we're profitable. So I actually think that if we can make some strides, get lucky, maybe go a little bit viral, and then also get a few anchor B2B clients.
From my conversation with Countable recently, they had a platform, can't remember, it was like 75,000 people going to it, a couple orders of magnitude more than you. It sounded like his big move was to move to the B2B and to provide that platform in a white label sense.
Yeah.
So that's a tried and tested move that one can make.
Mm-hmm. And also campaigns. I think campaigns need to see much more proof of concept before they be interested, but this could be a new way to engage campaign supporters rather than email fundraising.
But then what you're in is like, what am I selling to organizations that I want to sell to? And what am I charging? It's a software sale.
Right.
Right. What's your pitch? Like, I'm the executive director of the NAACP or something. Why do I want to use what you got?
NAACP, let's say they endorse candidates because they support their issues. Our pitch is, hey, the white label changers is a way for you to actually harness the collective energy of all your supporters in a way that funds politicians that are advancing your mission and gives you a way to fund the opponents of those that don't, to make it more likely those that are against your mission lose their next election.
So asking with this hat on, so explain this again. So I put your tools on my website. How is that connected to politicians that I support? Am I passing you a list of all those? Do you have a list of all of their opponents? How is that all being wired together?
Yeah. So we have every race in the country, the politician, and then who they're running against. And so
is that through Democracy Engine?
Yes. Yeah. And so the NAACP knows, let's say, the 20 politicians that they most strongly support. So they say, hey, here are the 20, mm-hmm. and we want to post about their views on these topics.
So they put these are our top 20. And it's really funneling right into your app. Is that right?
It would have nothing to do with changers.com.
It would use your tech and it would funnel directly into their
site.
Through, and you would take a piece of each of those as it went through.
Yeah, so they can also earn a revenue stream, which I think is interesting to these organizations. So if they get 100,000 people to donate $5 a month, they're getting 15% of 500,000, but then they split that fee with us. And so they earn significant revenue. They also advance their mission. And they have a more interesting way, I think, to engage with their supporters.
So anyone like the NAACP is going to have already a donation button on their site, right?
You'd be surprised that most advocacy organizations don't make it simple to support the politicians that they endorse. So there's a couple of examples that do it really well, but the majority actually...
Who do you think does it well?
I think like Sierra Club and Planned Parenthood and NRA. I mean, the NRA rating system is a great example, like 5-star NRA ratings. I haven't checked recently, but like how easy do they make it for NRA supporters to know everyone who has a 5-star rating and donate directly to them?
So those people presumably are either building their own platforms or using a competing platform. So you...
Or they don't facilitate donations well. A lot of organizations have a lot of priorities, and this hasn't really penetrated into the top of a lot of these advocacy organizations as a way to advance their mission.
Is there anything that regulatory issue with them? You know, if they're like a 501c3 or something, is there a problem with them using such an app?
To be honest, I'm not sure. So it's facilitating donations by an individual who's choosing to donate to a politician is kosher, because that's the individual making a decision how to donate. Being a middleman and then taking a tip for that, I'd have to check with our attorneys. I'm not sure if there is some firewall that's violating.
What's a question I should ask you that I haven't?
Why could post-partisanship could be healing versus, you know, I sense that you feel strongly that parties are good for the country, but...
Well, I think parties are a vehicle, right? They're a vehicle for politicians. So they're just people, right? They're just made up of people. They're flawed like people. Sometimes they're useful for aggregating preferences. Like, in order to get things through a legislative body, you need to get a lot of people on the same page. And one way that's evolved to do that, it wasn't part of the design of the country, is to have a bunch of people stand for basically the same platform and then vote together when they get a majority. It's pretty hard to do it without that in one form or fashion. But I know that particularly young people and a lot of people more and more every day are pretty disillusioned by parties. I've never had the sense that people who are unaligned, you know, have better values than people who are aligned.
And a lot of the research I've been following recently, and there's a book out by Arthur Brooks, who's the head of AEI, that does a lot of work with Brookings, and I think that's called Love Your Enemies. And he does a lot of this psychological research about contempt. And it's found that people in the wing, so like very far right, the very far left, tend to have contempt for those in the other party, and contempt being defined as the mixture of disgust and hate.
Yeah, it's supposed to be the thing that kills marriages, by the way.
Right, exactly. He does a great anecdote where it's like, you know, a marriage is, you know, likely to lead to divorce if you spend an hour with them and you watch how many times someone rolls their eyes when their partner is speaking, because that signifies contempt.
I guess I carry at the same time in my head this notion that I agree with you. We shouldn't have contempt for people on the other side of the aisle, that they're fellow citizens, that... A vote is a single expression of one preference. People come to that with tons of different reasons for it, yeah. Some of which are admirable and some of which are not. And I certainly wouldn't want to write off, take the most obvious, every Trump voter is not a bad person, even if I dislike this president. Let's just take one more swing at your enterprise. What will it take for you to give up on this?
If by the 2020 election... we haven't reached a critical mass of users, so let's say over 50,000 active users, and we are unable to get B2B partners, and there's no traction on the B2B side, I'd be shocked if we waited till then in order to really do some soul searching and evaluate, is there a pivot? Is there something we've learned from this experience that can be morphed into something else that can be valuable? Or to say, hey, you know, we took our shot, we had all these hypotheses, these hypotheses are proven incorrect. You know, it's time to close down and figure out what our next move is.
On the flip side of that, what makes you most optimistic that that won't happen?
Yeah, honestly, it's anecdotal, but we've gone around the country, we've talked to a lot of people, and people seem hungry for something new. People seem hungry for these post-partisan values and to reframe the conversation. People seem hungry to quantify a new way to evaluate politicians outside of just their votes. And we get a lot of enthusiasm from deep political operatives to ordinary people. And so it's that enthusiasm we keep getting that sustains us to keep experimenting and trying to figure out what is going to really work for this.
Well, it's my sense that there may be something out there. It's going to take some ingenuity to find it. That's where I am after a short conversation with you. I really appreciate you taking the time. Anything else you want to say?
No, I think we covered a lot of ground. I just want to say thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for coming on, Jake. That was Jake Sandler and Change Roots. He's at changeroots.com. I'd love to hear back from Jake in a year or two to see whether he made a go of it. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at resistancedashboard.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.